Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Tiffany and myself, Stephen. Now today we're talking about the impact of the Middle East conflict, and this episode is recorded on the 13th of April. We're telling you that because things are changing so quickly. Nobody actually knows what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Because since we last spoke about this issue, the United States and Iran have agreed to a 2-week ceasefire. Mm-hmm. But the ceasefire is now in jeopardy after both countries fail to reach a deal to end the war.
Yeah, in fact, US President Donald Trump announced that the US Navy will start blockading the Strait of Hormuz, and that's a very critical waterway. And the Singapore government also announced last week a support package of nearly $1 billion to help citizens cope with the rising costs.
Yeah, so today, Stephen, we want to talk about the long-term impact if this conflict drags on and how prepared are we to face it. And to break this down, we have Dr. Ruben Ng, Assistant Professor at the Lee Kuan Yew School of Public Policy.
Great to be here.
And also we have Denise Chok, Head of Southeast Asia Economics for Moody's Analytics.
Hi, thanks for having me.
All right, guys, thanks for joining us. So let's start off with talking about, everything's always about costs, you know. So we know energy prices are going up, but just how exposed are we to a conflict of this scale? And what areas do you think we will see price increases in and why?
This is such a difficult time. I think we are almost facing what I call a poly-crisis. Mm. We have on one hand, AI disrupting the industry. Jobs are being lost, right? Whole industries are being transformed. And then we have this particular crisis. I just hope we don't have another health crisis. Mm. Because we've been hearing about resurgence of hand, foot and mouth in China and all kinds of different things, right? So we are really in the eye of almost a poly-crisis. So I think because of this, it's just going to affect things on a really wide scale. I think people are just going to tighten their belts just because there's a lot of uncertainty. Mm. And I think on one hand, we talk about all these costs rising, but we also need to think about the psychological cost it has on us, right? The anxiety that is on top of the AI anxiety, right? Mm. So all kinds, I think mental health issues are just going to skyrocket. And I think we need to watch that on top of just cost in general.
The concern really is that even though our sources are diversified, right, global energy prices as a whole are increasing. So just because you're importing from Australia, from Indonesia, like the prices there are also increasing. So, you know, that diversification gives you supply, but you are still paying a lot higher prices. Mm. You know, the areas where you see price increases definitely are in petrol, electricity. Mm. I think those are the more immediate impact. But further down, you have things like plastics, which are petrochemical derivatives, food prices. All these things will be affected later on as well.
That's something we don't think about. Actually, you're saying plastics, like you mean my plastic disposable box container, that kind of stuff. Things which I guess the origin, I mean, crude oil in a way has a part to play in the entire supply chain of that being made, right?
So things like the wrappers on your Maggie Me or your plastic bottles, all these are all affected as well.
And toys for my kids.
Toys
for my kids as well. So, I mean, Christmas is going to be a bit sad this year.
Yeah, you tell them, no toys for you. It's not my fault. It's just...
I mean, I have four kids, right? I think they have to share the toys.
Oh, yeah.
One screen for everyone or one toy for everyone.
That's more because you're saying in those areas, we haven't felt the impact of the price increase yet, but eventually we will because of what is happening.
Absolutely, right? I think there will be some period where it has knock-on effects. So I think for some, we would face immediately, like petrol prices, we are hit immediately. But you know, all these are petrol derivatives, right? Plastics. Okay. So it's going to affect really an entire industry.
But I think also it depends on how much your supplier wants to absorb. That's that. True. Yeah. So maybe they say, oh, this is 1 month. I don't want to increase my prices. Then I lose all my customers, right? So they say, okay, I absorb for 1 month. I just hang in there and then prices will come down. So it depends on how long this whole thing lasts.
Well, the thing is, how long can you hang in there, right?
Yeah, but also then again, people are also saying that I see the prices increase now.
Yep.
Do you think this is also a chance for, say, suppliers or, you know, businesses to say, I price that in right now and then maybe it doesn't have to come down later on. Everybody just accept that this is the new normal.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it depends on what you're selling. It depends on what your competitor does, right? Mm-hmm. So if the market as a whole, everyone does this, then okay, maybe the prices go up. They say, okay, we raise price one big time and then we don't bring it down. But if I'm raising prices, my competitor doesn't raise, then, you know, people will be like, hey, what are you doing?
Right. So, but in a way, part of that is a bit like hedging, right? They're kind of making a guess that prices may go up, may go down, and they're trying to lock in what seems like a good price right now.
Yeah.
Which means things could still go either way for them.
We actually did sort of a poll, actually, on CNA. So, and the reason is because we wanted to see what Singaporeans are worried about, you know, in terms of mm-hmm. price increases. So, more than 2,500 people responded on this Instagram poll, and almost 40% say that they are concerned that food prices will jump. So, they specifically say food prices. Denise, you mentioned that. I mean, I'm already seeing an extra 30 to 50 cents in my bowl of noodles. We saw an article on CNA that says that hawkers will raise prices up to $1. So why are these costs factored in now as opposed to maybe a few weeks down the road when everything intensifies?
I guess part of it is they are facing price increases in the sense of electricity, right? So their overheads are increasing right now. So it's not that, oh, you know, they're increasing prices for no reason, right? They do see fertilizer prices going up. So again, another petrochemical derivative is fertilizers. So that is already affecting their feedstock and all that. So they do see this happening in the horizon. And so maybe they're preemptively moving, but they are basing this on actual numbers, right? So they're not plucking these numbers out of nowhere. It is coming from an increase in cost up the chain.
And to help everyone understand, I guess there is some fairness to that, because even if, let's say, the Strait of Hormuz opens tomorrow, ships come sailing in, I mean, we're looking at months, maybe even years before things come back to the way they were, right? So is it fair in a way for them to take this approach and yeah, help people understand why it's going to take so long for things to come back to normal?
I mean, to be honest, when prices go up, it's very hard to come down. It won't come down at the same rate as it has gone up, right? So there were some reports showing that fertilizers were one of the big raw materials that were not coming to Southeast Asia. So what that means is that farmers who are growing rice may not grow this cycle, or they may grow less, right? Maybe 10-20%. So then, because of the supply shrinking, but demand remains constant, prices will go up.
So you're saying that I will start seeing an increase in my, I don't know, Thailand premium rice,
fragrant rice
in the next few weeks, likely so.
I think so. I think so. And those rice burgers that you know and love, that might increase too.
I'm very basic. I just go for rice first.
If I eat bread, does that make a difference? Or I mean,
I think it will, right? Because bread, I mean, it comes from like wheat and everything.
Yeah, so, it's still coming from the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are there any areas in our food supply that will not be impacted?
I think it impacts up and down, because like and even if you talk about chickens, like pork, they still feed on the stuff that's coming out, right? And then milk comes from the cows and the eggs come from the chicken, so like it's a knock-on effect.
And even if it's cheaper or easier to get, then someone's going to pay for the transport, right? And transport requires fuel, and that also has gone up. So actually, if we think about it, there's probably nothing that will be left unaffected by what's happening with the conflict now.
Yes, and on top of that, I think what will change is our choice. Right. So I think instead of maybe going for certain choices that we used to like, we may then downgrade that choice to house brands or things that maybe have a more appropriate price point to what we are able to spend. Because it's not possible that prices are increasing, our salaries increase in tandem with that. Right. Yeah. So I think we will see a sort of recalibration of choices and what people are used will buy.
So we are changing our habits in that sense.
We have to.
We probably have to, right? Because we still have the same amount of money to buy what we need. Mm-hmm. So if we can't afford to pay for brand A, we go for brand B. And saying of food sources, I mean, we've learned from COVID-19, you know, during that pandemic to sort of diversify. But in this case, if we're looking at everyone being affected, all our neighbours too, then actually, how's that going to work? And also because Singapore imports pretty much everything.
The thing you have to rely on are the buffers as well. In terms of energy, is the oil buffers. In terms of food, is our rice reserves, right? So I think it depends on how long we draw down on those buffers. Obviously, the number is not public, so we don't know how much we have for now. But I think the buffers are in place for now to perhaps protect us a bit from
the
shock.
But we don't know for how long.
Exactly. Exactly.
And actually, we've heard we are freezing some prices at like our local supermarkets for some things for a period of time. I mean, that's good and bad, right? I mean, it's good because we're helping our people, but at the same time, it means we may not fully appreciate just how, you know, bad things are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the argument for petrol subsidies, right? So I think for our neighbours, you know, we know a lot of them subsidise petrol. And that's the argument. You say, oh, you know, if you're keeping petrol so low, people don't feel the pinch and then they overuse petrol. But in terms of food, like, how many bowls of rice are you going to eat? Let's say I give you free rice. Will you eat 5 bowls of rice? I think food is something that is quite, you know, inelastic, right? Your appetite is there. Maybe you eat a bit more meat, but, you know, on the margin, you don't eat that much more.
Yeah. Which is why the price freezing will help in a way, right? Another worry that, you know, our CNA you know, audience are saying as well is that they're worried that we may be headed towards a recession, or, you know, a case of like high inflation. Some people use the word stagflation, right? For those who don't know, what is stagflation?
So stagflation happens when you're having high inflation as well as low economic growth at the same time. So in normal times, let's say in a good normal period, you have high inflation, high growth. So these two offset. In a recession, you have low inflation, low growth. So, you know, you're not earning a lot, but prices are also not high. So that is good. Stagflation is sort of the worst of both worlds, right? So you have high prices and then no growth. So obviously this is very concerning for a lot of people, because maybe you lose your job and then prices are increasing. So what are you going to do at the end of that?
So are we headed towards some form of stagflation?
I want to say no, but again, we are sitting here at this period. I'm not sure what's going to happen this weekend, but for now, I feel we are maybe tethering on the brink a little bit. We are not nearer than 2022, I would say.
So we have been here before 2022, yes. Around there.
Yeah, I think that was Russia, Ukraine. So we had a big oil price spike there as well. So there was concerns of stagflation. We didn't actually fall into it then. So for now, you know, we are further from that point than we were back then. So I think we are all right for now.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's just for now, because we don't know how things are going to go.
Yeah.
How should people respond to this? What the man on the street will say, well, then what can I do to help myself or to prepare for that?
I think you nailed it, to talk about the man on the street, right? Because ultimately, one of the key drivers of whether there's a recession or not is consumer spending, consumer sentiments. There's a branch of economics called narrative economics. So what they basically say is that actually narratives could drive the economy in a certain way, get people to behave in a certain way. Okay. And right now, I think sentiments are just not good. So when sentiments are not good, people don't spend as much. They start to save a lot more. That then you can see that we may be fast-tracked towards maybe a more recessionary kind of environment. So I think it's very important, I think, from a government messaging perspective, to instill hope and stability so that people won't have knee-jerk reactions.
Okay, let's. A good point, right? I want to talk about this government messaging thing, because straight away when, you know, our government put out this nearly 1 billion support package, I mean, I celebrated that because I just thought, you know, that's what, you know, that's what we have been, you know, planning our reserves for, right? But then I couldn't stop having this nagging feeling that are we a little bit too buffered in that sense then, you know, as compared to other countries? So we you know, when I see what the other countries are doing in terms of their messaging to their citizens, they're telling them, you know, wear short sleeve to come to work because we're going to turn off the air conditioning and everything. That's when I got really worried, right? That's when I go, okay, I think this is bad, but why is it that, like, you know, okay, our government would choose to, like, okay, we'll just dole out all the cash vouchers first earlier. Is that the kind of messaging that we should be giving to people?
I think, I like to frame things maybe differently or more positively. I think the fact that we can do it should be celebrated. You know, some governments just can't. They don't have that buffer, right? So I think from a government perspective, they are sort of either reactive or proactive things that can be done. So most governments I see are being reactive right now. To a certain extent, every government reacts, but not every government can be proactive, right? So crisis like this, I think we have seen it post-COVID price spikes. You know, there were oil shocks before. So I think we have used those crises before to create buffers, which means that we have learned from different points and previous crisis to build that sort of buffer. And I think that's something to be celebrated. I think what needs then to be done, probably two things. One is, how can we increase the resilience of our people so that we don't just look towards the government all the time, right? So I think it's important. How do we, because yes, there are measures like this, but there are people who will be hit a lot more. So how can they bounce back, right? So from a resilience mindset perspective, I think that's critical. And I think the other point also is that we cannot just be looking up and down for subsidies, right? Or whether vouchers can be brought forward. It's also important then to look left and look right to see how we can help each other out. I think that's really important. That's the crux of a weaver society.
So we have to ask you this, because I know your area of expertise is sort of studying how social perception and the way we think and approach things. So this kind of messaging from the government, you're saying, is actually very important in helping not just people, but the economy as well.
Absolutely. So I think Singapore has branded itself to be a stable oasis, right?
Yeah.
So the stability brand, I think it's really important. So I think what the government is trying to do is to keep things as stable as possible, so to maintain not just external confidence, but also internal confidence.
Okay. Because sometimes when we saw what's happening around the world, other people saying work from home, no aircon. Yeah. So, and then I looked at Singapore and I go like, we're not doing any of that. And I almost got a bit worried myself that were we not doing enough now and would we suffer later, you see?
How long will before this buffer runs out?
Yeah, no, I thought that was a good point, right? Singapore does have the fiscal buffers to accommodate these things, and this is not true for the rest of the region, right? So I think that you're right in the sense that the fact that we can afford to do this is very much a good thing as well.
So we're in a very fortunate position.
Exactly.
Okay, but I'm sorry, I have to be Debbie Downer over here.
Okay.
Because if, let's say, the crisis continues and we are already tapping into these our reserve, will it be even more psychologically damaging if, you know, we are not able to prepare our people for the worst case scenario?
Yeah, I guess in the sense that buffers don't drop down suddenly.
Yes.
Right? So they would come on. If this happens, there'll be a point in time where they realise, okay, maybe we have a month of buffers left, and maybe that's when you see the kind of these kind of things happening.
But so the messaging will change.
Exactly. Yeah. But in that sense, I think there could be a change towards alternative fuel sources as well, right? So maybe more solar, more electrification. So, you know, perhaps more climate-friendly sources that aren't as reliant on crude oil or natural gas.
So in a way, the fact that the government is so confident in that sense now is gives us more reassurance, because we know that if things start getting worse, I'm sure they'll let us know. And they'll, you know, eventually we won't have aircon in this room at one point, and then we know we're in trouble.
That's how they tell us.
Yeah.
So no, I just sense that the government has played out different scenarios. Right now, I think we are at a point for the short term. I think we are okay. But I agree very much with Denise that we really need to diversify our fuel sources. Because right now, I was quite alarmed that actually 95% of our energy comes from fossil fuel.
LNG,
right?
Yeah.
So I think it's time, and we probably need to accelerate the push towards nuclear, towards solar, or all these other alternative sources. We just need to accelerate that.
Actually, we want to talk a bit about, you know, because we've set up, we're very good at doing this in Singapore, setting up a task force.
Yeah.
You know, so we set up this home front crisis ministerial committee to sort of look into this issue. I mean, when we did a task force for COVID-19, I mean, people actually thought, hey, that's great. You know, we're pulling our act together, putting whole of government, everyone's acting on it. So similarly here, I mean, is that the message you want to send out? And how can this task force sort of, what will it look at? How will it help us deal with this issue?
I think from a task force perspective, it just increases the gravitas of this particular situation, right? Every time we have something that is whole of government, that is really confronting Singapore, we have a task force, right? So back in the 1990s, we had the Interministerial Task Force on Aging. Mm-hmm. You know, over time, we have stuff like that. So I think it's really important, because there is no one ministry that owns this particular crisis.
Mm.
And also, we need to understand that this crisis has all kinds of consequences and is so unpredictable. We just don't know which areas of society is going to be affected, right? I mean, I'm really concerned about polarization, because societal polarization, because of the language that's being used right now. I think the US administration has been saying that, oh, God is on our side, right? So it becomes religious, right? Once it becomes religious, there's all sorts of societal polarization that would knock down our social cohesion. So I'm really worried about that. Mm-hmm. So I think what this task force tries to do is to say that, okay, this is very unpredictable. There might be multiple direct and indirect consequences. We just need to be prepared for it, so that when something happens like this, we are discerning that some sort of societal polarization beyond what we can tolerate, then I think this particular task force or this work group can actually work on that. We just need to be a bit more proactive and preemptive in this particular regard.
Mm. Yeah, you brought up a good point, because I think so far the conversation has always been about the tangible effects.
Yeah.
But what about the long-term societal impact, right, in terms of like social cohesion and everything? Denise, what do you think, this committee can do besides just confidence building?
I mean, from public sentiments, there could be a bit of task force fatigue. I feel like in public consciousness, like we've had COVID task force, we have haze task force. So I wonder at what point does this lose this impact, right? It's like, oh, another crisis, another task force. But I do acknowledge, again, obviously this is good to bring a ministerial level coordination. So it's not that, you know, they're not doing anything. But I guess to our point on messaging earlier, right? Like what does it say where everything, oh, there's a task force? Is this the answer now for now?
Yeah. I guess since we have task force man, we decided a few more. Got to give him stuff to do.
Working harder.
Okay, but let's look a bit ahead and say now...
Let's do scenario planning.
I was just going to say, right? Worst case, best case scenario, right?
What should we start with? You want to start
with
the bet?
Let's start with the bet, yeah. Okay.
What's the worst case scenario?
Who wants to go?
In this case.
I can talk about it because this is what we do for a living, right? So we have clients and everyone's asking...
Life is quite depressing.
I know, it is.
And they want you to give them answers so they can plan ahead,
exactly,
right? Your clients.
Exactly, and things are changing day to day, right? So our worst case, actually quite sad, but our worst case has been getting worse. So like when this started...
Where's the bottom?
Right, exactly. So when this started, our worst case then is actually our baseline now. So what we expected the worst is actually playing out now. So you can imagine what the worst case will look like for now. Maybe I just tell you what our baseline is. So our baseline is that maybe the strait reopens at the end of May, right? So maybe everything resolves. The strait reopens. The Gulf countries, they start ramping up oil production. Things normalize by middle of this year. So this is our sort of most likely scenario.
So actually that's the best case scenario.
No, this is baseline. So
baseline scenario.
So hopefully this will happen. But worst case scenario, the strait is closed out to Q3, Q4, end of the year. This starts to impact Christmas. Oil prices hit like 150. So just to think back in 2022, the peak then was 120.
Yeah.
So 150 is surpassing that peak for a long period of time, right? So the oil production stops, nobody's going through the straits, inflation skyrockets, food prices, petrol, electricity goes up.
Stop, I cannot breathe.
Yeah, but I guess it's worse. We need to assure people this worst case scenario.
This is the worst case scenario.
Maybe 5% probability of this happening, right?
Yeah.
Best case scenario, you know, maybe this ceasefire is 2 weeks, right? So we are 1 week into a 2 week ceasefire now. Maybe 2 weeks, it ends, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, the most ideal thing we can hope.
Ruben. You're sitting there also absorbing this like me. I wasn't expecting all of that, actually.
No, I'm listening to you know, Denise's assessment, and I just felt that, wow, this is worse than I expected.
Yeah, it is, right?
It's pretty dark. Yeah. And because
all these things are tangibles, you see. What about the intangibles that I was talking about, right? Yes. Society divides. Because right now, we pretty much have a K-shaped economy. I think what's going to happen is that the crevice is going to deepen in the K-shaped economy. So the people who are doing well will do better. The people who are doing not so well will do even worse, right? Because the spending power has decreased, prices have increased, confidence have plummeted. There's almost a stagnation of aspirations, right? Mm. So let's say if I were SME, small, medium-sized enterprise, I got Enterprise Singapore grant to expand overseas. Would I expand overseas now? Probably not. I'd probably delay that. Then the people I'm hiring, I probably won't hire them anymore.
That's right.
Interns I want to hire. So there is a knock-on effects of all these intangibles. So that's what I'm really, really worried about. Scams may increase because people are looking for jobs and then, you know, prey on the people like that. So I'm just really worried that these may really happen. So I think, you know, I just go back to the earlier message. We really need to look out for each other. And I think for those who need help, need to seek help.
Yeah.
Because without seeking help, without saying that, you know, I can't do it anymore, I need help, without reaching out, there's no way people can be helped.
And that is scary because honestly, if you... The doom and gloom picture, the worst case scenario you've just painted is pretty bleak. And if it comes to the point where I have to choose between taking care of my own family versus somebody else, obviously I would choose to protect my own family, right? And you would do things that... will be selfish, will be, you know, all about just your own survival. So that is really a very bleak ending. Which is why, okay, let's not end it on that note because we got to remember that you're saying is a low chance, like 5% chance that could happen, and it would take quite some time to build up to that. So for now, how would you encourage people to respond? What should we do in this moment of crisis where we're kind of in a crisis, but we're still not sure just how bad or how it's really going to hit me?
So we did a survey with Gallup some time ago of 140 countries, about 150,000 people around the world. And we asked people, what do they think about when you think about risk, right? So 70% actually say that risk is danger. But the other 30% say that risk is opportunity. I think we want to take an opportunity mindset. In a time of crisis, we can build an opportunity economy. I think that's really important. I think that dose of optimism is important to see the silver lining in a crisis and see opportunities where people see danger. Because I think if we can see that, then... you know, issues become an opportunity to help each other out. It can be an opportunity to expand in areas maybe I haven't thought of before. And overall, I think this optimism contagion will build resilience for for society and be good for Singapore.
So find opportunities. Okay. Denise.
No, that's a really good response. It's really hard to come after that. But maybe I guess from a sort of more macro perspective, maybe the way to think about this is sort of Singapore as an oasis of calm, right? Amidst all this disruption, we have investments flowing in, you know, things are business as usual for now. You can trust us.
So I guess that's the opportunity that Ruben mentioned, right? Use this this crisis to be able to say, okay, we are a haven for businesses or even people to make Singapore their home. Because at the end of the day, we will, in that sense, try and protect and shelter you as best as we can.
Yeah,
and that if it comes to the day where we might need to change our messaging, we'll let you know early in advance.
But I think it's not just about the economy, not just about businesses, but as Ruben pointed out, about each other. Because if we seize an opportunity at the expense of someone else, then that's not great, you know. So I think we need to be mindful of how we approach these opportunities as well. Okay, folks, well, thanks so much for coming in and sharing this with us. You know, I mean, a lot of you will probably have thoughts and about this issue. We are happy to hear from you. If you have any thoughts, any comments, please do drop us a note. We do love to hear from you. But otherwise, I think that's it for this week's Deep Dive.
Yeah, hopefully when we next see you on this subject matter, we bring good news.
See you next week.
Bye.